G'day guys, and welcome to the brand new APS News Bulletin. Now guys, the whole idea behind the APS News Bulletin is giving you the things and the facts of things that are happening and dropping every single week, and is giving you timely updates on things that are breaking and things that are changing as they're moving as well, giving you that really key up-to-date information to keep you well informed on your property investing journey. We're going to be doing this as a weekly fashion, guys, and just looking to bring you all that updated news as quickly as possible. Now, to kick off, guys, probably one of the biggest things that happened this week was the RBA getting back together. Now, they've brought out a new structure, a new regime. They used to run 11 meetings a year. The only month that they didn't used to run was a January. Every other month, they used to meet on the first Tuesday of the month and give their verdicts and give their decisions. Now, they've changed that. And under the new structure, they're doing 8 meetings a year now instead of the 11. And some of these are dropping like this month in the middle of the month as opposed to the start. So this is the first meeting under the new regime, the new structure, and it's going to be very interesting to watch how that plays out. The whole idea behind it was to give them more time between meetings to give, you know, real, I guess, premise or need to get together that often to then give realistic sort of feedback on what they're seeing in the market as well. Drawing an article from Big Tim Lawless over there at CoreLogic, head of research over there, his article this week was rates on hold and the next move is likely to be down. There's some really good key points in here that I wanted to break down for you guys as well. Now, the RBA obviously kept their rates on hold, which didn't surprise many. But there's a lot of economists and whatnot out there now out there predicting that the next rate movement is going to be down, not up. That is always a good thing for both consumer spending and consumer outlook to keep the economy strong. So we're seeing a good boost to confidence on that side of things. We're also seeing lower inflation that's coming across the board as well, and we're expecting that to continue to drop. And obviously that next rate movement being down, being either later this year or early next year. The close thing to watch on this thing is really going to be all around the inflation numbers and how they're moving. If they stay sticky, if they stay high, they probably will hold the trigger and leave it off as long as possible. If it does start to slide back down to where they want into that target band of the 2-3%, they'll undoubtedly be more likely to start pulling the trigger on some rate cuts. Now, higher services inflation remains a focus for the RBA. Beneath the headline result, which obviously that is inflation is lower and that they haven't moved them, which is obviously a good thing. It's clear that services inflation remains stubbornly high, he writes, reflecting a tighter labor market, which is continuing with trade wages growth and whatnot as well. Insurance and financial services is up 8.1% annually. Household costs, including rents, up 7.3% annually. New build prices up 5.1% annually. And utilities, so the cost of living, like your gas, water, electricity, all that sort of stuff as well, is up 8.4%. So those higher sort of services that we can't really control too much on our end is obviously increasing as well. Now, the RBA expects services inflation to decline, but only gradually. Hence why we're thinking that the inflation numbers will stay stubbornly high. Housing values also continuing to rise as well. So despite the high interest rate environment, housing values remain broadly resilient in most strong capital cities and regions as well. So still rising, still got that upward pressure due to all the things we've spoken about before, being very tight housing stock, very tight supply, and low build numbers, keeping the pressure on what is out there and available as well. Now, guys, just to wrap that up as well, the next RBA meeting is in the first week of May. So we've got 2 months or around about 6-7 weeks until the next one's out. So stay tuned for those results as they come back through. But just to recap on that, guys, as well, it's looking good. We aren't looking at interest rate increases. Again, a lot of people, myself included, Big Timmy here in this article as well, calling that the peak is here. I know we called this a few months ago as well. We actually called it late last year in the end of quarter review as well, end of year review. So we believe strongly that the interest rate rises and whatnot as well, that cycle has ended. We're going to be in a period of plateau, which will be good for sentiment, be good for movement. And the next movements are going to be down. But obviously, the timing on that is really going to come down to inflation and where that ends up. Moving on, guys. Another article that came out that I thought was very interesting and I think worth breaking down as well, also from CoreLogic, the lovely Eliza Owen, relationship breakdown, how the housing market defied the economic indicators. In other words, how house prices have continued to rise despite super high interest rates, high inflation, and the rising cost of living. The affordability is decreasing because the cost of living is increasing. That should be putting a strain on house prices and house price growth, and yet it's not. And this is where she's talking about this relationship breakdown that everyone's always seen between high interest rates mean low house price growth and low interest rates mean the strong house price growth. This is where it's kind of moved outside of its normal relationship and sync, and they're still rising quite strongly, even in spite of that. Key points from Ms. Owen's article. Historic relationships between interest rates and home values have broken down, with home values continuing to rise despite record increases in interest rates in both 2022 and 2023. Factors such as strong population growth, tight rental markets, and active buyers with less reliance on housing credit have helped support the housing market recovery in 2023 and now into 2024 as well. Notice those things there. We're talking about strong population growth, tight rental markets, active buyers, and a supply deficit of builds. Talking super boom, you know, conditions, guys. Consumer sentiment, as measured by the monthly consumer sentiment index, reached its lowest average month reads since the early 90s recession in 2023. So consumer sentiment is down as low as it's been in literally 30 years, and yet house prices are still growing. Again, this is what's going back here. It's a very interesting time in the market. Once again, why we went so bullish on the super boom call, because even though it is a rising cost of living, it's very hard to afford things right now. The housing market is still moving. Right? Throw on the things that we're seeing coming. Migration staying extremely strong. So population growth staying extremely strong. Building deficits. And we're still seeing a lot of price growth movement as well. I don't think this is going to slow down anytime soon. To round this out, economic and housing value, housing data towards the end of 2023 suggests there may be a time limit on how long this does continue to defy the high interest rates, but early indicators in 24 show that market conditions heating up again in some of the weaker capitals. Once again, guys, if we recap on this side of things, in terms of that with the weaker capitals, I say the weaker capitals because they're more affordable. But what we saw happen so much during COVID and even post-COVID as well is a lot of people looking for affordable living options, both from a rental and a price point perspective, where they could move to these weaker capitals where they could get more affordable housing, a better lifestyle, and still earn pretty much the same, if not the same income in those locations. So it doesn't surprise us at APS at all. We've been calling this for a long time. The affordability pain points remain very, very strong that we're seeing out there. And those more affordable markets have still got that fire under them and into them. And if we throw on top of that as well, a lot of people, when they migrate to Australia, they might initially come into, say, cities like Sydney or Melbourne, but if it's very expensive to live there, they're not going to stay there very long because they're not going to be on big incomes. They're not going to be making a huge amount of money. So they're going to be wanting to move somewhere where maybe they can start a life with their family and afford to live there, or just move somewhere where they can still afford to live. You look at the lifestyle options now on offer in, you look at Queensland, WA, Adelaide, these sorts of cities, even Hobart for a lot of people as well. These cheaper capitals, a lot of the time, so much more affordable, but the lifestyle options are still great. No longer does it need to be the big cities of the Sydney and Melbourne where everyone needs to move. And I think COVID really brought a big change around that. To recap on that, pretty much it's all about the super boom conditions that APS has been talking about for a very long time now, staying in effect and showing a really big, strong effect on the marketplace. Last article, and probably the reason why you clicked on this one as well, the Australian housing construction has collapsed. And this article is written by Leif van Onselen from Macro Business. The latest data on Australia's housing construction has been an unmitigated disaster, with his words. Dwelling approvals, commencements, and completions have each collapsed to decade lows at the same time as Australia's population is surging. So you think about it, we're building so many fewer homes, we're getting approvals for so many fewer homes, so many fewer are actually even getting to completion the lowest point here in decades. And when you have a good look at this side of things, we've also got the strongest population growth that we've seen ever. When you combine the two of these, we are in a serious issue from a building perspective compared to population growth. Now, new home sales collapse, new building approvals have collapsed massive. Now, interesting thing to note this, guys, I was having a bit of a look back through this. We're actually at the lowest level in 17 years. If most of you can probably remember what was 17 years ago, it was the GFC. We had massive construction up until 2007, 2008, fell off a cliff. We had this big dip as it came back down. They are the same levels that we are at right now. So that's a little bit of a worry from that perspective. Also, obviously combined with this super, super high population growth. The other big thing which Leif here hasn't got in his article, but something that I'm witnessing a lot out there as well, is a lot of builders are going under, right? Left, right, and center. When Big Liam gave his market update in the APS roundtable in December, I remember one of his points was, I think it was from memory, does two builders on average a day going under in Australia. Looking at even how this has played out in this year, in 2024, and what I personally have witnessed already, you know, we're 2.5 months into this year and four builders that I know personally have gone under in that time frame. So very worrying time for builders out there right now as well. You know, build times are blown out massively, trade price increases, material price increases, you know, demand for the actual product has decreased as well because pricing has gone so high as well. So it's one of these very awkward sort of times out there in the industry, guys. Now, guys, just to recap on this and moving forward as well, one of the key points that Leith wrote here in his article as well is like the idea that we can build 1.2 million homes, this idea that Labor's sort of brought to the table over the next 4 to 5 years, it is ridiculous, right? It's an unachievable target for us. We are building at the lowest rate we have in 17 years, and they expect us to be able to build homes at the fastest rate that we ever have, right? The correlation there is it's unachievable. It cannot happen. And you know, when, again, we throw the population growth on this side of things, we need the new housing, but we can't build them quickly enough, and it's not going to happen. So the idea that they're going to do it in this time frame is it's fallacy. It's not going to happen, especially with the current economic situation that we're in. That's pretty much wrapping up his article. The way that I really see it as well, we need to incentivize private construction, so specifically private investors. One of the biggest trade-offs or the catch-22s on this thing as well, though, guys, is the more grants and whatnot that they might bring in from this side of things, the more demand goes into that product. And if there's only a limited amount that can be built anyway, it just makes it more and more expensive. So we're in a very, very tricky position and situation when it comes to the building environment right now. But one of the other big things they could do, guys, is cut developer red tape, whether they're converting existing things like existing office blocks that maybe are no longer being used in big capital city CBDs, converting that style of building, converting that into housing options would be massive, bringing more affordable housing options to the table as well and supporting affordable housing. But lastly, the only real solution to this problem is cutting immigration and cutting immigration back to a decent level. Now, if they don't do this, this situation is only going to worsen and get a lot worse before it gets any better anytime soon. For property investors, this isn't an issue for us. If anything, it's a good thing. If you already hold property, there's going to be more demand on property prices. There's going to be more demand on the rental market. And they're not going to catch up with the building of new homes if they keep immigration and population growth as high as it is. Now, as investors, this is good for us, right? But for the Australian economy and for the actual housing market from that side of things, it could push it into kind of unprecedented sort of territory. And for people trying to get into the market, it will get harder and harder from that perspective. Again, guys, there's pros and cons. There's always winners and losers in all this sort of thing as well. So all I'm doing, guys, is summarizing what I'm reading out there and what I'm seeing, and then pretty much bringing it back to you guys to digest and implement as you see fit. But as always, there are always places worth buying in. There's always opportunities out there in the marketplace to take advantage of this stuff. And pretty much we just want to keep you as updated and informed as possible to make the best investing decisions that you can. Guys, that's a wrap from me. I hope you enjoyed the new APS bulletin. If you did, make sure you write in and you let us know. If no one likes it, I'm never going to do it again. So make sure if you enjoyed it, you write in and let us know. Until next week, guys, that's another Scouting Australia podcast.